always informative.
5AA.
Always Adelaide.
The 5AA Player app lets you listen to all your favourite 5AA shows wherever you go.
5AA Mornings with Matthew Pantelis.
Our state is the segment at this time on a Monday morning, and today we are talking about the EPA, State of the Environment Report. Well, not so much EPA, but State of the Environment Report for 2023. But from the EPA, the Environment Protection Authority, Keith Baldry, Director of Science and Systems. Keith, good morning.
Morning, Matthew.
And Dr. Matthew Ward, Director of Science and Info at the Department for Environment and Water. G'day, Matt. How are you?
I'm good, thank you.
Thank you for coming in. Keith, let's start with you. What is the State of the Environment Report? Why is it produced by the EPA?
This is something we do every 5 years. We do it. It's actually in the legislation, so that's why it's us. It's certainly not only us that pull it together. Mm-hmm. So we're working in particular with the Department for Environment. We are looking at the data as to what the trend and conditions of our beautiful environment in South Australia is, you know, the air, the water, the climate, biodiversity. We look at the pressures on the environment and the actions that are taken and ultimately make recommendations to government of what more needs to be done.
Okay. I'll ask you about what you found over the last 5 years in a tick. But, Matt, the Department of Environment and Water, series of trend and condition report cards on five main themes. Why monitor trend and condition? Talk us through the themes. What do you do exactly?
Yeah, thanks, Matthew. So the Department for Environment and Water produces a set of trend and condition report cards. Our 2023 reports produce 51 trend and condition report cards across five themes: climate, biodiversity, water, land and livability. And these provide the scientific basis for which the EPA produces their State of Environment report. The condition is the condition of the particular piece of the environment at a point in time, and the trend is really important to demonstrate how it's tracking over time.
Okay. What have you found in the last 5 years particularly?
There's quite a number of themes. There's 51 report cards. So some of the highlights is that certain pressures such as our climate, the state is doing really, really well in cutting greenhouse gas emissions and increasing renewable energy. Also demonstrated in biodiversity, where we work together with landowners and with community groups and we invest in biodiversity recovery, we get some really good outcomes. Of course, there's also concerns. So biodiversity continues to decline across the state. We found that 42% of plant species were declining and 46% of animal species were declining.
Okay.
But this also reflects a national and global phenomenon around biodiversity as well.
What about your work, Keith? How's the last 5 years shaped up for South Australia?
I think that there's a whole bunch of positives. I mean, we can look at the renewable energy generation. We can look at the recycling. I think that we all know that South Australia leads the nation in recycling and development of resource recovery, starting off back in the 70s. I think so it's given us a really good platform. However, it's really clear from the data that the climate and biodiversity going backwards, much more needs to be done. So what I'd say from the EPA's perspective, we've got a really good platform. There's a really good sense of commitment from the community, from government, but you know, the scale of the issues that we face, clear from the numbers that Matthew just referred to, that we need to do much more.
What are the key recommendations moving forward then, over the next few years?
There are the recommendations that report to me, they're to government, and sort of it's asking for much better coordination. There's no quick fix to this. So we're going to need government and community and industry to work together, but the report focuses on the priorities. So the priorities really are for us climate change, how can we further reduce emissions, but also what do we need to do to adapt to this changing climate we've got.
Yeah.
Biodiversity, and obviously these are not unrelated, so biodiversity decline is also related to climate change, and so we need to take more action to preserve what we have and actually, you know, go further and try and restore these environments. It's important, and here's the key recommendation around listening to the Aboriginal people who've taken care of this country for over 60,000 years. We need to listen and learn and hear their voice in the plans that we're making. And I think that in terms of, and the final key priority area relates to plastics, because whilst in South Australia, we're just fantastic at recycling. As a nation, we just keep on generating plastics, and that needs to change. We now find plastics in every part of our environment. And so we need to do more to actually, let's stop producing the things, as not just rely on end of pipe recycling.
Yeah, indeed. Well, that's right. So the world is slowly moving towards that, probably not fast enough, you'd argue, given the report, but we are moving towards that at the very least.
Yeah, and I think one of the key findings here is that we are moving, but just not at a pace that's fast enough to address the speed of change and the scale of the challenge that we're facing.
Matt, the 1970s, obviously huge changes, and, you know, I don't reckon you were around. I was a kid, at least, but we've seen a far different world. I mean, temperature here in South Australia, about 1 degree warmer than what it was back then, for a start.
Yeah, that's right. There's been significant changes in our climates since the 1970s, so the average South Australian temperature has increased by 1.1 degrees since the 1970s. Some other interesting stats we've found through our monitoring is the average daily maximum temperature is expected to increase by a further 1.4 to 2.2 degrees by 2050, and that's compared with the period between 1980 and early 2000s. Also, the frequency of days reaching 40 degrees in Adelaide has tripled to 5 days a year, and that compares with 1.7 days in the previous 4 decades. So the science is really, really clear, and that is that our climate temperature is increasing.
We've been letting that data down the last few years, though, haven't we? It's been relatively mild, even this summer. I mean, I presume it's over by now. It seems to be, and did we get there once or twice, maybe?
Yeah, that's right. It certainly feels the most recent summer has been one of our, you know, been a nice mild summer, but the science, and this is why we record trend, is because you measure those averages over time, and the averages in South Australia and Australia and globally are clearly demonstrating that increase in temperature. And average annual rainfall in South Australia is also projected to decrease by up to 23% by 2050.
So by a quarter.
That's really important for our farmers.
Yeah, what does that mean for food production moving forward? That's, you know, we've got the food bowls just north of Adelaide particularly. It's going to be harder, obviously.
That's right. I mean, we've had some of our best grain-producing years, actually, in the recent years, but that's only been in certain areas, such as the Lower Eyre Peninsula and the southeast. And it's really important to remember that those areas that Goyder's Line predicted in the mid-north, and they are still experiencing really lower rainfalls than average, and that's predicted in that area to continue into the future. So, and the climate projections also demonstrate that spring rainfall is going to decline. So I think what we've probably seen this year is a lot of summer rainfall, even up to Christmas, and that's what's changing. And so that's what's really important to keep an eye on for our agricultural production.
Anecdotally, at least, I think when you talk to people, it feels like, and you might have a more scientific perspective on this, either of you jump in, but it feels like the seasons are just getting later, that instead of, you know, winter starting in the 1st of June, it now starts sometime in July, and spring kicks in, I don't know, October, November, and then summer a bit after that.
Yeah, that's right. You mentioned before how long I've been around. I have been around since the 1970s, but it does feel like it's actually pushing back. And they're even predicting this year potentially some heavy rainfalls in sort of September, October, November, so also pushing back a little bit further. So,
Maybe we need to change the calendars around.
One of the things we did in producing this report is speak to people in the regions, and the people, whether they work on the landscape boards or their farmers themselves, they know how their environment is changing, and they can see these seasons actually coming forward. I think that they're going to be a key part of the solution as well. I think that government has to work with the regions, with the farmers, to actually say, how do we adapt to this, and what can we all do? Because it's not just an interesting thing that we see crops or birds arriving on a different day. It's actually going to affect our ability to produce food, but also relating directly to biodiversity. And biodiversity is something that it's not just a nice to have thing. It's critical to our ongoing survival as a species.
Well, it's all linked in, isn't it, ultimately?
It is, yes.
Yeah. So, okay, the people that need to take action are exactly what you've been talking about, just getting the boards, the government, the farmers all together and determining what the future looks like?
I think so, yes. And, you know, for example, we need to, in order to do decarbonisation, we're going to have to, even though we think we're doing well, we're going to have to really push a lot harder on renewable energy generation. That's going to need to be done in a way that protects and preserves the biodiversity that we have. We can't just have unlimited development. However, if we can do that, the real opportunities to actually, we can make a contribution not just to South Australia, but globally. You look at the green steel or green cement that are being worked on in the north of our state in Port Augusta and Whyalla, and if we can get it right, there is actually a benefit to the businesses, the local communities, as well as addressing some of our significant environmental concerns here.
You may not like this question. Nuclear, does it have a role in that? You talk about renewables and bringing that forward. Does and either of you feel free to chime in? Does nuclear have a role to play?
Funny enough, my background before coming to Australia, I worked in the civil nuclear industry. Mm. And suddenly with submarines, it seems more relevant than I ever thought it would be in Australia. I think that for a state like South Australia, it's unrealistic economically, if nothing else, to actually embark on that. I think that the platform that we have in South Australia is an expectation that we can do renewable energy. We've got the coincident wind and solar. We've got the locations where we can make it happen, and we've got commitment to do it. I think that nuclear is a bigger national issue, and I don't think that South Australia is going to strike it alone on that.
All right. Matt, in terms of tracking the biodiversity decline, what do we do to change that moving forward? Is it a Biodiversity Act? I mean, one exists already, doesn't there?
Not in South Australia, no. There's multiple bits of legislation we have to manage biodiversity, such as the Native Vegetation Act, the Landscape Act, and also Coastal Protection Act. But the government's actually embarking on developing up a Biodiversity Act, and they've gone out to public and stakeholder consultation recently around what that Biodiversity Act might entail. And that public consultation's now closed, but now the government will be considering that feedback and tabling a piece of legislation, hopefully down the track, for the Biodiversity Act. And the intent of that Biodiversity Act, as we've said with as Keith said previously, is to pull many elements of our legislation together, and also to ensure those partnerships are rich to help protect biodiversity, but also really make science and data central to how we manage biodiversity moving forward. So we've got so many industry partners, so many landscape board partners, community groups, ENGO groups working on biodiversity, and it's really important that we get that data and science back into government so that we can then better monitor our biodiversity as well. So that's one of the key intents of the Biodiversity Act.
I know the draft act was open for public consultation. What did you get from non-scientists? What were people telling you?
People were saying that this act will be really important. It was it was amazing how much feedback we had saying that it was a really good thing that we're embarking on this Biodiversity Act. People were interested in increased protection for biodiversity, and also, as I just mentioned, how do we pull together elements of different pieces of legislation? Because, you know, we do have pieces of legislation in place for certain elements of biodiversity. Probably what's been missing is how do we bring this together? And the other thing was that transparency of decision making, and also the importance of the data as well.
Part of this would have been the River Murray, no doubt, and this falls right in your lap, Matt. So what does the report tell us about the Murray? Is it better than it was? Where are we at? Salinity levels, I imagine, are still over the top.
Yes, salinity is still an issue of concern, but salinity is improving because we are getting better at managing the River Murray. Flows of the River Murray is still traditionally quite low. We have had some recent years, obviously, with flooding, that things have been far better. But dredging at the Murray mouth still is required on those average years. And so flow is still generally low in the River Murray. Probably one thing that the most recent rainfalls and floods have demonstrated is the importance of those environmental flows. So we are seeing some really positive responses in some land-based systems that rely on the River Murray, such as our black box woodlands and our river red gum woodlands, and they're showing a positive response. And likewise, some native fish are recovering as well.
Did the flooding help with some of that, particularly those woodlands?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So when the flood was coming down, we reached out to our research partners and generated a a research portfolio of measuring the benefits of the River Murray, and that's still playing out now. But it's one of those things. Adding water is generally a really positive thing for those ecosystems that rely on the River Murray. So still a lot of work to do, and a lot of work to do to ensure those environmental flows are high enough to maintain those ecosystems, also to support our agriculture industries as well. So getting that balance right.
It was nice not to see dredging for a while as well during that flooding, wasn't it? But yeah, that's back now, I think.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So on those average years, dredging is still required.
Yeah, absolutely. Keith, the report itself, obviously it's compiled by the EPA. You're the brains trust of it, aren't you? So who else contributes to that? Where do you get all this info from? Obviously Environment and Water contribute too.
So the core scientific data is the DW trend and condition report cards that Matthew was talking about. Yeah. The report we actually have, we try and make sure it's representative. So we have the landscape boards represented, Regional Development Australia, Aboriginal Affairs and Reconciliation, and the Conservation Council of South Australia is also part of, you know, developing the recommendations that come out of that. But as part of compiling the report, we also went to the regions to speak to local communities, to local government. We also held sessions in Adelaide. We had on the website, we had one of the YourSay government feedback and consultation pages. Mm. And so what we tried to do to make sure that everybody had an opportunity to be reflected in that. And so some of it is the scientific data, but also we've got a lot of case studies that really sort of add colour and highlight to make it sort of real for people as to what do we mean when we're talking about biodiversity conservation and success or issues that we're facing.
I've got a mixed review to all of this on the text line that I'm looking at in front of me here, where, I mean, there are people saying it's great work and when we need to improve in what we're doing. Other people saying you've drunk the Kool-Aid, you're accepting the information you've been given without questioning it. I suppose you guys are the scientists ultimately, and you're here to talk it up on behalf of the government. But here's one that's saying fairyland ideas, taxpayer funded, and there's no transparency. What do you say to that sort of the scepticism, I suppose, about where we're at with climate?
I think that it's important that the plans that government undertake are transparent. And I mean, one of the problems with government plans on websites is that they are, it's difficult to really see the difference that they are making in themselves. So I do appreciate that sometimes it looks as if we are getting excited about the plans, whereas really what we are genuinely interested in is the community and the, you know, the longer term impact. It's difficult to measure on a day-to-day basis. That's why we do this report every 5 years. I think the trends over the even the last 5 years are clear that further action is needed. So it is really important that what the actions that we take and are subject to scrutiny, and that the actions actually are able, people are able to be involved in the plans and the responses to this. But it is a real thing, and the data does show that, you know, we have a long way to go. We're actually, it's the biodiversity challenges and the climate changes are more than we can cope with at the moment.
All right. Matt, what's your response to that?
Yeah, good questions. One thing I wanted to highlight with the trend and condition report cards, every one of those report cards is backed up by a peer-reviewed technical report, and people can find that on the department's website. So if you do a search for our trend and condition report cards on the Department for Environment's website, that will have links in the report cards to every one of our technical reports, and they're peer-reviewed as well. And, as indicated, some of the numbers are clearly demonstrating that more work is required in many areas, but there are also clear that where we do invest and we do work together, that we can get positive outcomes for the environment.
Well, you've listed some of those in the info that I've got here. Hooded plover, for instance, the sea lion, glossy black cockatoo on KI. So those are successes, clearly.
That's right, and we have the numbers to back it up. Mm. So glossy black cockatoos, for example, early in the 1990s, there were approximately 150 birds on Kangaroo Island. scientists at the time said this is a real issue. We worked together with community and with other partners, did some actions such as planting some of their casuarina woodlands and protecting their nest hollows from possums. And prior to the bushfire, we had over 400 birds. And so that monitoring is really, really important. So there are clearly some successes. And if we think about renewable energy as well, that's increased from 1% to 69% over the last 20 years. So I think the concerns are valid, but there is data to back a lot of this up, and that's what these reports are about.
Gentlemen, thank you both for coming in today. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, Matt.
Thank you.
Our state today with the EPA and the Department of Environment and Water, Keith Baldry, Director of Science and Systems at the EPA, and Dr. Matthew Ward, Director of Science and Information at the Department for Environment and Water. Thank you both.